I leave tomorrow morning for Hawaii. So I'm really hoping there's one first class seat left. And Michael is, he is first on the upgrade list, which means that I am first on the upgrade list. So
sure.
Crossing my fingers.
Yes.
I've always been curious of how they decide who gets upgraded. So that's interesting. I feel like they should be like, look, who's having a rough go? Who got divorced this year? Like,
sure.
You know, right. Whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Merit-based first class. Right. Or not merit, maybe tragedy-based. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who needs a hot towel to get through this? All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. Maybe you need a hot towel and a Xanax to get through this podcast from either of you or our listeners. But we are here learning how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
And a special guest in the studio, Roxy Laguspec. How are you doing, Roxy?
Hello. Doing very well, thanks.
Okay, do you want to, do you have like a little, you know, sign on? Elise and David each have their own, like little like thing they say when they're introduced. You know, you can
come up with it. Oh, I should have been prepared for that.
Yeah.
Next time.
I'm glad I don't have to do that because then I would forget or like do it or like, and then I would remember like a minute later and be like, oh yeah, here's my little catchphrase. So
we'll re-record, fix it in post.
Yes. So Pastor David is not with us today. And if you're a listener out there being like, oh, where's Pastor David? He will be back next week. We intended this podcast to originally be kind of like a two-part thing where we, the three of us record and then Pastor David comes on at the end, but I think it's going to go long enough. We're going to say it's just a two-parter. So Pastor David and I will have a podcast coming out next week on part two of our discussion. So as promised last week, one of the things we wanted to kind of get into was some major, you know, things in our world lately. So we're talking about the Governor Abbott's kind of trans, it's not like a bill, but kind of trans like executive order or government order for those who are mandatory reporters to report trans kids and their parents for child abuse. Is that, I'm right on that, right? Like, I want to make sure we're all on the same page before we jump in. And Roxy has agreed graciously to join us for that discussion. Spoiler alert, none of us are trans, but we do have some connection to the trans community. So we're not speaking from direct personal experience for any of this, but we are speaking from a level of connection. And that level of connection is probably going to vary between the three of us. And we'll kind of get into what that looks like in a bit. But before we jump into that, we're going to go over some news stories.
Oh, the news.
Yeah. So
my favorite parts.
Yeah. So it's been a tough 2 years. Am I right, everybody?
You're right.
Thank you. To the audience. So, yeah, I think like I was about 2 years ago was when kind of our last like normalcy was going on. And then like our world rapidly changed. And, you know, sometimes when the hits come, they just don't stop. When you're back there in a common class and regular class, you know, sometimes the person next to you hasn't showered in a couple of days. The hits just keep on coming. We're going to go over a couple of things that just keep on coming because, of course, it's 2022 and we can't have nice things. Okay, so here's our headline. Magical Japanese boulder that's imprisoned a demon for 1,000 years
has
mysteriously cracked open and people are spooked.
Yeah. All right, what kind of demon? First question. What are we dealing with?
Yeah. Okay.
We already had plague and pestilence and war. What else we got?
So by tradition, this is a boulder that was imprisoning a Seshu Siki. That's the name of the stone, the killing stone, which is so powerful that anyone who comes in touch with it dies, allegedly. Okay.
Who comes in touch with it?
Yes.
And touches it? Writes it a letter. We're in touch. We text sometimes.
Yes. Oh, I got to go back and make sure I did not accept that friend request. So,
Whoops. Killing demon, deny.
Yes. According to legend, the stone is actually the transformed dead body of a beautiful woman who is also a nine-tailed fox.
Oh. Okay.
So
that's a lot all, at once.
Yeah. Am I right? A thousand-year-old demon. Of course it's a lady. Hey,
right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. A foxy lady, no less.
Yes, yes, quite literally a foxy lady. Yes. So yeah, this stone, the fox lady stone, has broken. And after nearly 1,000 years, is she on the loose? These are the questions. What do we think? We think there's a foxy woman out there plaguing our worlds.
I don't know if this is going to be high on my list of things to worry about. I like both foxes and ladies, so I feel like I'm pretty good with this one.
Sure. Yeah, you know, like sometimes, you know, a foxy lady comes around and does plague the world. Like we all have the Kardashians, right?
Sure. So, there was Helen of Troy way back in the day.
Yes. Yeah, Helen of Troy. Maybe that will be kind of the myth of the future. When 2,000 years from now, people will look back and be like, remember the Kardashian?
Yes. Oh, the Kardashian.
Yes. Right. How the part of the downfall of our society. Okay. Yeah. So at least not worried. Roxy, what about you? Are you nervous about this demon stone being broken?
You know, I think I'm with Elise at this point. Pandemic. Gas prices, I think.
We're just out here trying to live.
Yeah, I think I'll take my chances.
Yeah. Look, yeah, Foxy Lady's just living her life, just doing her thing.
Let her out of that stone.
Okay, well, if that is not a sign of the apocalypse for you, maybe this is.
Oh, boy. All
right, I got another headline here. Big, invasive, parachuting spiders will begin to cover the entire east coast of the United States, experts say.
I'm way more worried about this from the jump. <Me too. laughs> Maybe this is the demon.
Okay. Well, this is from Georgia. They're already struggling to accept these spiders. These are some great quotes here from some people that the CBS Baltimore interviewed. I don't know what Baltimore is doing down in Georgia, but whatever. It's disgusting, said Anna Reed. A big no, said Donisha Match. Oh, Lord Jesus, said Gregory Lightfoot. That's my favorite. The University of Georgia scientists have released a study saying new eight-legged residents are about to become more prolific in Georgia and spread up and down the East Coast. All right, so we said big. How big does a spider have to be classified as big in your mind?
Really, good just question. Being a spider is probably enough, but
sure. Like you can
all
see
spiders
it.
Are big spiders. I mean, like, that's probably too big. I'm holding my hand up. Nobody can see that. Yes.
I was thinking anything bigger than like a tennis ball or a
holy cow, you're going really big. Okay, that's okay. Like a camel spider.
Yeah. So this is probably about that. So this is originally from Japan. Oh, no. Strikes again. The 3-inch long
crossover
Joro spider. And I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correct. So it's 3 inches long. Is that big?
I mean, in this context, yeah, that's huge.
That's pretty big, yeah. So, yeah. You know, that would be probably about as big as a tennis ball or a baseball or a post.
How are you measuring a spider? Is it like from leg to leg or is it just the body?
If it's just the body and the legs are on top of that, that thing is massive. I assume it's leg to leg. Yeah.
Ooh, no, I don't like any of this potential.
Yeah.
All right. Do they parachute? They drop from the sky?
It's begin to slowly spread out because it has the ability to survive the cold. So the cold is not going to drive these spiders away.
And why does it need to be in Georgia?
That's a good question. Why are they up north in Baltimore?
Look, the devil went down to Georgia. Spiders go down to Georgia. It happens.
Yeah. It would be Georgia.
Okay. Here's the good news. Its fangs are so small relative to most human skin that it probably won't be able to get its fangs into you, even if it wanted to. It does want to. I don't know. But is that reassuring, really? If the spider is crawling on you?
Yeah. I'm mostly worried about it touching me. Yeah. Like, I don't really need it to bite me for it to be horrifying.
I'm sure there's going to be a large period of time between the rational thought of, oh, this isn't actually going to injure me, and oh my god, I'm dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Usually when I see a spider, I'm not measuring its fangs. Okay. I don't,
right.
You know, like,
excuse me. Can you open?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So why are they called parachute spiders? They can travel using their webs like balloons or parachutes to ride the wind. So they're not up in like airplanes, like, you know, old army paratroopers being like, all right, green light, go, 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 go. And right. just like coming out, you know, on us. But they do travel riding the wind.
They're like flying squirrels, but sure. way worse.
But yeah, but not cute or flying.
Right, or... flying squirrels if Stephen King made them up.
Sure. Yeah. So Elise, you said you're more worried about spiders than the demon fox lady. Roxy, yeah. what do you think? Which is the worst for you?
I think the spiders in quantity are so, it sounds like, going to be so many. So that yeah. feels scarier.
That's right? true. There's only one demon fox lady. And look, I'm saying, we trapped her once, we can trap her again.
Right.
I don't know how, but we figured it out.
Right. Like, surely she can't be everywhere at once, too. But like, we have to rope off the entire East Coast, it sounds like, for these yes. spiders. So...
Who fled? How are we going to keep it? Yeah.
right.
Yeah. That may cancel all your plans to go back to South Carolina there, at least. So.
You know, that might do it.
yeah. It's only out west. We're only going yeah. west these days.
Well, so. California.
All right. So let's get into our main topic, kind of focusing on kind of this transgender bill and kind of not just this one bill, but kind of a the trans community has been in the news often over the last year, kind of like probably when we first kind of made like these kind of cultural debate was probably a couple of years ago on a bathroom bills. Was it maybe really was something we all had to like discuss and debate about? Before that, most of the trans community was privately living their lives, doing the best they could. And now kind of like thrust into kind of a cultural discussion that probably, and you know, probably most everybody was not really equipped or prepared to really talk about in a healthy or constructive yeah. manner. So let's get into this. I got a couple questions here for us to look at. So first, like I said, none of us are trans, but let's say, what is our experience with the trans community? You know, what is our connection there?
Well, so I will just go ahead and put out there that you, Patrick, are, you know, to an extent an educator and you work with youth, and Roxy, you're a therapist. And so you both have more of a connection specifically to this bill than I do.
Yeah.
So I figured kind of my role today would mostly be to ask questions and kind of listen sure. to an extent, because I have really, you know, practically very little connection to the trans community.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know for me, I've had a couple of trans kids come through our youth program. You could say, you know, we're excited to have them with us. It did, you know, for some families and some of our youth, create some speed bumps and some obstacles to jump over. And I can say, you know, in many ways, you know, and not to make light of an issue, in some ways, it is difficult in some ways to say, how do I work with this process, especially with a kid who's saying, 2 weeks ago, we knew you by one name and one gender, and now 2 weeks later, we know you by a new name and a new gender. And that can be a lot to take in. It's a lot to take in for me as a fully formed adult, but for mm-hmm. a 15-year-old, that's a lot to process and kind of comprehend all at once. And what does that look like? And how do we work with this? The kids we've had that have been trans have been incredibly gracious and have done a good job of being supportive, even when we get a pronoun wrong or call them by their old name. They've been incredibly gracious on what this looks like and a great understanding of that it's been a long time coming for them, but it might be a long time coming for the people around them too. It's not going to be an instantaneous turn of a page and we're just completely done with the past. That's something that can be an obstacle. But Roxy, you might have the most knowledge and direct influence greater than myself or Elise. So let me know your kind of connection to the trans community.
So mine's kind of, I guess, two-part. I don't work directly with the community as part of my career. And I had essentially no experience really before I entered into what is not my marriage, but my romantic relationship with my wife. And so I think after entering that relationship, becoming more involved with the community, allowed me to gain a better appreciation for the trans community in particular, and just experience more of it. But I agree, Patrick, with what you've said, the work that I have done, with youth in particular, for some, it's hard when dead names are used. You know, it can be painful, things like that. And we have a lot of conversations, trying to put it into perspective for the kids and saying, you know, how long have you thought about this or struggled with this? And usually it is a fair amount of time. And so I say, okay, so you yourself have been considering this for months, years. You know, you've got to give your parents, your teachers, know, the adults in your life, your friends, you've got to give all of us at least that much time, if not more, to kind of adjust and adapt.
Yeah. And I, you know, you use that phraseology, like a dead name. That's, you know, usually in the trans community, that would be referred to the previous name you had, and now you're of the previous, you know, presenting gender, and now you have a new name that you're accepting and going by. And, you know, for some kids, this is their new name that they've picked out. And, you know, as a parent, I could say, like, most parents out there kind of spend a long time thinking of what they're going to call their kid and like thinking through, this is what I want to connect to them as for this name. And so when a child comes out as trans and say, this is no longer my name, it's now this, that could be an emotional process for parents to say, like, that was a special name for us. And so I hear, you know, and a lot of parents who even are supportive can say, like, I hear you and I hear that it is your dead name. It was also the name of my grandfather, you know, like, right. So like, yeah. And it was something we really thought about and prayed about and really came up with to honor you with this. And now it is tough just pushing that aside. And so it's okay, you know, if you're a person out there who's listening, who has a connection to a member of the trans community, it's okay to sometimes struggle with like this kind of closing of one page and opening up another, because it can be a lot. And then sometimes it's in many ways, you know, a death of one individual and the birth of another all at the same time. And yet there's still kind of a thread between both of who they are at their core. So it's a lot going on all at once. So I think it's okay to be complex. And so if that's what you're thinking, it's okay to be complex. So like I mentioned, the trans community has kind of like been thrust into the spotlight several years ago with bathroom bills. Now, last year it was over athletes, more specifically male to female trans athletes. And now here in Texas, it's over this kind of child abuse bill, or not bill, but kind of government orders to mandatory reporters and social workers. So why do we think, or why do you think these issues have kind of just been dragged into the culture war? And for the most part, I don't think it's solely the trans community like bringing these things to the forefront of our discussion as a community. Sometimes there are many people in the trans community are kind of like forced to address these things somewhat against their will, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I know years back, bathroom bills were kind of all the rage when most people in the trans community were just kind of asking honestly, like, where do I pee? Like, where would I pee that would make the people, that would make sense for me personally and make this organization or community I'm with comfortable in a sense?
Only that, but I think there was a large population of the trans community who were already doing all of these things, and so shining a big light on it and bringing attention to it made them feel less safe and brought more, you know, confrontation over something that was going unnoticed, you know, joyfully. That was, you know, if I've heard many people say, when I use the bathroom that I identify with, it is affirming, it is a relief, I feel great about it. And so to shine that light onto it and make them feel all of a sudden under attack was really, yeah. really difficult for them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So any thoughts on kind of like why these have now been like kind of more cultural issues instead of previously more personal issues?
Well, the biggest thing, I mean, the immediate thought that I have is just related to partisan conflict.
Yeah.
It's a hot button, you know, hot topic issue right now that gets people really fired up, and they are able to stoke the flame by feeding into any fear that people have, mm-hmm. Which I think is really, really unfortunate. You know, as we're speaking about the bathroom bill, it at the time was not, you know, the bathrooms are going to be too crowded. That wasn't the argument. They were, you know, telling parents that scary, you know, perpetrating pedophile men were going to be into the stall. We're going to abuse this bill, you know, this concept, and be in the stall next to your child, next to your daughter, which was really, really sad and unfortunate to sort of think, like, one, if that's going to happen, passing a bill is not going to stop.
Right. It's going to happen anyway. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the amount of hurt that comes out of that, sort of insinuating maybe that a trans woman, you know, would just comparing those two, I can't mm-hmm. imagine how hurtful that would be.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's especially like, are all data points to, if a child is abused in any way, it is by somebody that child knows. I mean, like, right. it is a close person, not a stranger. That's just like all evidence points against that. But strangers are scary, right? Like,
right.
People we know are not scary. So it's easy to kind of like use this in a partisan way. I also think, fair or not, you know, like, this was, oh, definitely not fair. This was used against the gay and lesbian community mm-hmm. in the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and long before that. But, you know, since I've been alive, those were kind of the conversations I remember having. And then after kind of our Supreme Court passed gay marriage, I think a lot of people kind of realized my previously held beliefs were very wrong. And that there is now a greater support than there was 15 years ago, even by people who were alive 15 years ago. You know, I always kind of think it's you know, funny, like Barack Obama, first, you know, Democratic president who it passed under, did not run on a gay marriage platform his first time around, because it was not even like that that driving of a social force for liberals.
Right.
And so that, now that that has kind of passed, more people have kind of said, well, I have friends who are gay, I have relatives who are gay.
Right.
And that they've done the courage of kind of coming out, bearing those slings and arrows. And now the society's like, they seem really, like my, the gay couple at my kid's school seem really nice. But the trans yep. community, we're kind of banking on like, maybe you don't know a trans person. Like, maybe, right. or you don't think you know a trans person. Maybe you right. don't have a trans person in your, who's a grandchild or connected to you. So it's easy to kind of use kind of somebody who is farther away as kind of like, they seem scary.
Right, well, so, you said strangers are scary, right? And yeah. so it's a lot harder to feel, I think, that these issues are really incendiary when you know somebody that falls under that banner, right? Or when yeah. you care about somebody that falls under that, it's much more humanizing. And you can be like, oh, well, like, I see that they're really just, you know, living their life. You know, there's nothing very scary here. I might sure. not understand everything, but it's not scary. But when, you know, we have probably entire communities of people who think that they do not know a trans individual, right?
Yeah.
It's still very like hush hush and all sure. that. And, you know, it's another good point, like with Barack Obama and the gay marriage legislation and stuff, that things become, you know, hot button topics very quickly, relatively speaking, right? Mm. That moved, I mean, I know it, you know, was a long, long time coming, but, you know, in over the course of politics from, you know, Barack Obama to passing that happened fairly quickly, right?
For sure. And so, now it's unthinkable that a liberal politician would not be a supporter of gay marriage.
Right.
Like that's not even on the table. That would not be on any level, you know, from local to state to federal. That would be kind of an unthinkable thing. So it went from not a big issue for much of America to an incredibly important issue very, very quickly with the gay community. Now, obviously for the gay community, this was a big issue for them for a very, very long time. And I think most liberals, and I think I'll throw myself in this ring, kind of look back with a lot of regret and saying like, man, why wasn't this as big as an issue for me? It should have been. So I do think there are pockets of, people who are considered more progressive, even if they do not know themselves a trans individual, they're saying, I kind of messed up in the 80s, 90s, 2000s when I was coming of age and I did not stand up then, I'm not going to mess up now. That even though I don't quite understand everything, this is a vulnerable community and I want to make sure that they're supported because I didn't do a good enough job 20 years ago. Go ahead, Roxy.
I also think with some of this, let's, use the Supreme Court ruling with gay marriage, a lot of people are realizing, okay, they were right. This didn't have anything to do with me. It didn't actually affect me at all, or my marriage, my heterosexual marriage, it didn't affect that whatsoever. And so I'm a little bit hopeful that people can apply that to trans issues as well. What one person does with their body to make themselves feel good and feel complete and whole has absolutely nothing to do with me or how I lived my life.
Right.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so let's talk now about kind of what we're facing directly here in Texas. All three of us reside in Texas. The church I work for and the pastor David works for, that Beyond Sunday is broadcast out of, is in Texas. And so when we have Texas politics, even though I think these things are discussed on a national level, this is a direct, it directly affects all of us, especially, myself, Roxy, Pastor David, who are mandatory reporters. These are big things, right? Like this idea of like, okay, Governor Greg Abbott has to pass this decree that gender-affirming care and medical attention can be reported or should be reported as child abuse. So real quick, let's get our initial reactions and we'll kind of jump into kind of some of what this means.
I'm always super leery whenever the government tries to get involved with somebody and their doctor. That's a, my feelings on trans issues aside, that's a huge red flag to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would have been heard maybe, I'm not sure how to say this, accepted a little bit better, or would have made more sense anyway, if he had support of the American Academy of Pediatrics or the American Medical Association. If he had said, look, according to these people, this is what they're saying. But in fact, he has the opposite, which I think is just baffling and such an overreach, and just it leaves the rest of the community sort of in a panic of, well, what do we do if, like, for me, the Texas Counseling Association immediately made a response discrediting it and saying, we do not believe in this, we do not support this. And so my governing board, the Texas Counseling Association anyway, going in opposition of this, which puts us in a really tough place of what?
Yeah. What does this mean? What do you do? Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. We can take a look back, and it at the time it was kind of like the end of our primaries for who was going to be the Republican candidate for governor here in Texas. It is probably in some ways fueled by political posturing and getting a couple more votes. But to the very real trans kids and their families, this is not just an issue that we can talk about theoretically. It's incredibly personal. For every mom and dad out there who's had their kids say, "Mom, Dad, I'm trans. This is what I'm going through." And they were scared out of their minds, and they thought, they sought therapy and medical support, are now facing, are we going to be reported for child abuse when we were trying to do our best to care for our kid? And we have the knowledge that trans kids attempt suicide at an alarming percentage. And so if you're a parent and you're like, if I do nothing, it raises the risk of my child killing themselves. And if I do something, I could be reported for child abuse, my kid could be taken from me, and then they might kill themselves. That's a really scary place to be. And for supporters and people who are backing something like this, it's probably pretty easy to do this when you don't have to face those things directly. When these are not questions that you have to ask, when you have to go through, it's very easy to kind of make somebody else foot the bill for these very emotional and difficult decisions for families to make.
Well, not only that, I think people are, despite the statistics, the overwhelming statistics that have been in place for decades at this point, they simply say that they're false, that they're exaggerated, that they're, due to something else, gender dysphoria, confusion, whatever, influences these children have, misguidedness, right? All of these other excuses for reasons why these children are suffering, rather than there is medical care that they can be receiving that will not solve all their problems, but certainly, reduce their risk to themselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and so that kind of led to Pastor David releasing a really beautiful statement for our church community and for the community that we serve, saying, we do not support this, and that at our church, we believe all are welcomed. And so whether you are a trans individual, have a family of a trans individual, we believe that you belong not only in our society, but in our religious and church community, that there is a place there. And so just a little preview, next week, Pastor David and I will kind of take this issue, but address it more from a biblical or directly kind of Christian point of view. Right now, we're kind of talking more from a cultural point of view, but we think that both those things matter on how we kind of address this, since we're Christians and we operate from a Christian church. So he and I will address that next week. So if you're like, this Beyond Sunday episode, they didn't really talk about Jesus very much. That is coming.
Busted.
That is coming. One, we did talk about some spiritual warfare with a demon fox lady. So
we got it. Check mark.
All right. So some things I really wanted to address here. Some of the things that have just been addressed, like gender affirming care. This is kind of like what is kind of the highlight. If this is prosecuted, if you do gender affirming care, you could be convicted of child abuse. So let's just ask the question, what is gender affirming care? I think that's an important question to say, especially if you're unsure, you're not quite sure what it's like to be around trans, especially trans kids. What does that mean? Because the big bad boogeyman that they're kind of putting out there is that some kids are like having irreversible medical procedures at the age of 9 or 8, and that they can't possibly know at that young, because what if they're wrong, right? And, is it, possible that an 8-year-old says, "I feel like a gender that's not my own," and later in life says, "Maybe I was drunk"? Sure, it's possible. That's not what we're talking about here, though. When we say gender-affirming care, especially for kids, it is an incredibly rare situation where that involves anything that is irreversible. So what does it mean? Do you want to answer that? I also have this from TexasTribune.org here, kind of did some great some great work on kind of addressing all these things.
I could speak on it a little bit, but I did want to say at some point, I know I figured at what age, this tends to come up, and at what age could my child make this distinction? At what point are they sure? At what point do I question, is this a phase? And there's no clear cut answer for that. Every child is different, but I have heard 5 and 6 year olds question, mommy, if I die, do I get to be a girl in heaven? Right. So there are young children who are very confident in this decision, in this, you know, idea, and in this identity. But so, you know, at that young age, at 9, typically you're looking at social integration. You're looking at a change of clothes, a change of hairstyle, something like that. At puberty, you're looking at potentially hormone blockers or hormone injections, which is, again, not a permanent change. It's essentially, we talk about it a lot as a pause button. So once those, you know, once you go through puberty and those secondary sex characteristics come through, it makes it really hard for people in the trans community to pass as they're transitioning. It makes their transition much, much difficult, more difficult, because they get these very identifiable physical characteristics. But again, it's not a permanent change. It's just a stop clock on time. I think based on the research that I have done, very few permanent medical procedures would be done before the age of 18.
Yeah, that's an incredibly rare situation with incredibly specific circumstances. Like that is definitely not the norm, and things like that. And part of why we do a puberty blocker to have the, make a pause is partly to give space, right? To give space for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old to say, like, hey, let's pause this. And as you grow and your brain develops, you'll be figuring yourself out. And then if you are 18 and ready for something bigger, you're there. And if you're at 18 and you, and not change your mind, but you say, no, this is different, then those things can be reversed and kind of go back to it. So it does lead to that, like, well, we should be forcing, there should be like space to that. This does give that space. Like, this is for that.
This is, and what that is.
Yeah. Yep. And again, and a lot of it is social, like those social norms, as Roxy said, that pronouns, names, how you present with clothes and hair and makeup. These are not things that, and you know, a pair of scissors can solve your haircut if you quote unquote change your mind about this. So these are not things that are done to kids that are irreversible and things like that.
Yeah, and just from the research I've done, it looks like a huge portion of gender affirming care, especially for children, is counseling, right?
Yes,
it's therapy and counseling, which everybody should be doing anyway.
and I believe, you know, from my understanding, if you want to get on puberty blockers or hormone therapy once you post puberty, almost every doctor out there requires, you know, going through kind of like a mental state checkup, not just you show up to the doctor's office and you're like, I want puberty blockers. And they're like, here's a prescription. You know, like it does require, like, we need to make sure everything is in order here, because, you know, like we mentioned at the top, a lot of kids who are trans are at risk for suicide. And sometimes that leads to greater risks for anxiety, depression, or other issues kind of going on. And a therapist there to process what that looks like matters. And so I think it's easy to be scared of something you're not aware of. So when people are out there thinking what it means to be trans is we're taking an 8-year-old and doing some irreversible surgery and making them their perceived gender, it's not that. That's not what this is. It's something completely different. And I think that matters, that knowledge matters. Any other thoughts kind of about kind of Governor Abbott's trans kind of mandate before we kind of move on to kind of some other cultural issues?
I think this is not really an opinion, but just an update, which I guess will be done by the time this airs. But tomorrow on the 11th is the is when the court decides if they're going to block that directive statewide or not. To my knowledge, there has actually been some investigation into some of the families. I saw something about a family that attempted to have a dinner with the attorney general to kind of demonstrate, look, we're a normal family, you know, and that family is being investigated now. So
this is heartbreaking. And one of the things we'll kind of discuss next week with Pastor David, since we're kind of that when we're trying to approach this more from a biblical or Christian point of view, it's okay for you as a listener to say, when it comes to like the trans community, to say like, I don't get it. It's okay to say like, I'm not entirely sure what any of this means. I don't know where this comes from biblically, or what do we make sense of this, or all these kind of things. But this is not just a, hey, I don't get it kind of mandate. This is a very real one that does affect kids and families who are doing their best. So it is okay to say like, I don't get it. Or, you know what, the idea of, you know, not presenting as the gender you were born at is incredibly foreign to my psyche. I just cannot comprehend that. It's okay to think that, but just know this is incredibly personal and real for every family. There's kids out there who are right now, were prepared mentally to come out as trans to their families and are not, because they don't want their mom and dad to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then this is a 12-year-old carrying all this internally of, I have to be who I do not see myself. I look in the mirror and I do not see myself, and I have to carry that or else my mom and dad will get in trouble. And
the pressure of that is just, I can't imagine how heavy that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and parents having a very real thinking of like, we want to support you, but we're
not sure if we can. Right.
Yeah. Or do we have to keep the secret? Do we have to now have a parent stay home and do homeschooling because we can't risk getting reported?
Right.
And again, we're trying to save your life on how this kind of operates.
And again, as a therapist, looking at the data, just the data of how crucial this care is, and how detrimental the lack of this care is, and yet, you know, our governor is willing to push this forward, and yet on the opposite end of that, so that's obviously not being made a priority, whether they just don't believe these statistics or something more terrible. But on the opposite end of that, they're still promoting things like conversion therapy for minors, which again, we have tons of data showing is harmful.
Right.
So it's just baffling and it's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I did want to briefly kind of touch down on kind of the other like big cultural one that probably you saw on Facebook about 9 months ago. Maybe you got into an argument or had some questions about it. And that's this idea of kind of trans athletes. What do we do with trans athletes? Almost entirely the argument was about what we consider like male to female trans athletes. The argument I've never seen or never kind of came up was this idea of like, the female to male side. It was almost entirely male to female trans athletes. What do we do in this situation? And it kind of creating like kind of a bit of a culture war over who do you support, young female athletes or the trans community? And reality, you're like, both? I like both of those things.
Right.
But it's like, you got to pick one. So what do we make kind of this kind of this debate that kind of has gone on in our kind of world?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like,
sorry,
I was going to say, it's like you said, it's not mutually exclusive, right? Like just because you think that trans girls should be able to play sports doesn't mean that you dislike other like, you know, cisgendered girl athletes. Like it's ridiculous. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's really hard for me because I was an athlete growing up. my whole life was about sports, played in college, was all about it. And so, and that's a lot of what you hear currently is at the collegiate level or the high school level going into college of young women, you know, being passed over for scholarships and things like this, or that's how it's being presented anyway.
Yeah.
And it's really, really tough because I think the community on both ends, you're hearing that drive for, you know, a very black and white response.
Yeah.
You're supporting, you're with us or you're against us from both sides. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really difficult because I, you know, personally, I can't see it that way. It's really, really tough. I'm glad I'm not a part of the committee or the team that has to make that decision because I don't know what the right answer is. I do know that, you know, attacking a person for playing a sport under the current rules feels wrong. You know, if you have an issue with the rules that are being instated currently, then that is an issue with the NCAA or, you know, whatever governing body of that sport. But it, to attack a person, a young person, right? These are typically anywhere from 15 to 22 year olds, right? 23 at the end of college. I mean, that is wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think obviously it comes to kind of the female side, the female sports sides, because there are a handful of cases across our nation where we do have, you know, a female trans athlete come into a biological female sport and kind of be really good, like, and have like kind of like in some ways better than their competitors and kind of setting high school records and coming in first in all the races. And I think some of the other girls who are there who said like, I worked my butt off and perhaps this person has some biological advantages that I just do not have. And there's nothing I could do to kind of overcome them. And I think in those situations, like, does my heart break for both sides? Yes, it does. Like I'm with Roxy. I do not know the right answer on this situation.
Right.
There are many people on both sides of the issue who do know, who think, or who say they definitely know the right answer. Their answer. I don't. I'm not there. I understand both sides. I think it's incredibly important that we give space for our trans athletes to compete and to have an incredible experience playing on a team. And I think female sports are often in high schools and colleges underfunded and undersupported. And and those girls should be loved and supported and honored by their communities as well. And so it's hard to say, like, I want both of those things. Is it our way to make both of them happen? And I don't know if we can ever get there as a society. My hope is, I don't think you can get there arguing on Facebook, but I do think, you know, that there, through our greater knowledge, we can say, like, let's aim for that. But I also will think there are those, and I did argue on Facebook about this, those out there who use kind of the guise of supporting female athletes to be against trans athletes, that in reality they do not care about female athletes at all. Like, it means nothing to them to support the female athletes in their community or in their college. They don't care. Like, the male athletes getting more money, greater equipment, those things, totally okay. They're on board completely with those things. This is just like, I'm gonna use this because it's against trans athletes, and so it's aside from because the trans community makes me feel weird.
Well, an interesting point about that is, in what I've seen anyway, the arguments have only been against solo competing sports, right? I've seen stuff against track athletes, swimmers, things like that. But I wonder if it were a softball player or a volleyball player where you're part of a team and hey, this trans young woman is helping your team excel basketball, right? Would we be hearing the same argument? And maybe the answer is yes. I just have not heard it yet.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I also heard on Facebook, like, some people saying, like, Well, what's to stop some 15-year-old boy from just saying he's trans so he can join the girls' soccer team and dominate and get a scholarship?
I mean, you're a real limo if that's what you want to do. Just saying.
And just my understanding, I have not done a ton of research, is that there are current guidelines for it. There are restrictions for it. I think the person, you know, regardless of the direction of the transition and the sport being played, they have to be on, you know, puberty. But like, let's say we're talking about male to female athletes, they have to be off of testosterone for 2 years, I think, prior to being eligible to compete. So for someone to abuse that system, they would have to really commit to doing really have this planned out for what is probably a longer period of time than a 15-year-old is going to be able to.
Look, sports families can be crazy, but what kid is saying, like, I'm willing to take a 2-year hiatus from playing in this school-sponsored sport, potentially be ostracized from every one of my friends, my family, my community, and here in Texas, risk getting my parents in trouble with the law and me being sent away to play soccer. I think that's a disingenuous point of argument. Again, I think if you land on the side of, I think it's most fair that that there are too many biological advantages for male to female trans athletes, even with hormone blockers, to compete against other biological females. If you land on that side of this argument, I'm not here to fault you or to really argue on this podcast, but I want to make sure you're not just using this argument to punish trans kids. That it's okay to think, you know, that again, males, female, trans lives are just to be biological advantages with or without testosterone. And that's okay to think, but to use this as an excuse to just be anti-trans is kind of gross. And sometimes I think people are doing that without even realizing they're doing that. So
yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay, so we talked a lot about kind of these issues. Lastly here, what can we do to support the trans community, especially we're not trans? You know, what can we do to directly kind of support the trans community? Even if you're like, I don't really know if I interact with a trans person on my day-to-day.
I think, you know, the easiest thing is to just acknowledge them, right? I imagine that is some of the most hurtful criticism, I don't know if that's even the right word, criticism that they get is just being invalidated entirely, their entire existence being invalidated. It's not difficult to use a pronoun. I mean, if you're mixing them up, that can be a little bit difficult sometimes, but it, you know, to intentionally use an incorrect pronoun is just hurtful. It's something I don't think I'll ever understand. Even if you say, man, that's different, that's weird, I don't really get it. Mm-hmm. They're asking you to do something. Research, you know, medical boards are telling you that it is helpful to their overall health for you to do it.
Yeah.
It's not hurting you to do it.
Right.
Just do it.
Yeah. If somebody's like, hey, my name's James, but I go by Jim. You're like, yeah, but your birth certificate says James.
Right. I was going to say that. I was going to make that comparison. Like going by your middle name.
Like people go by what they go by. And when they introduce you, you just say it. Like,
yeah,
this is what we do in every other interaction in life.
Yeah.
Like, this is just what happens. Right. Like if somebody, if somebody came up to me and kept using female pronouns to like refer to me, I'd be like, please don't do that. That's rude. So like using a pronoun that is not correct is rude. Like, and if somebody is like, hey, I really would prefer you do this, it's just rude not to. And you can do that without even being like, I'm 100% on board with every issue for the trans community. You could just be kind. And that matters.
Yeah.
And you know, a way to do that is to sometimes offer your own pronouns in social situations to say, yeah, I go by he, him, so that everybody kind of like, for the trans community in your midst to say like, it's not weird to say my pronouns when I introduce myself. And, you know, I can simply say, I'm not very great at that, but that is a way that we can do better at kind of saying like, this is a way to do that. And I think with Governor Abbott's mandate, if you live in Texas, is to put something on social media and say, I disagree. And I support trans kids and their families to make those decisions with their doctors. Again, I think many people seeing that, especially in maybe your social circles, goes a long way to say, like, this is not, like, this idea is not the 100% norm of this community, that there are others out there who are standing against this. And even if you're a conservative or Republican, you can still say, I disagree with this and I don't think that this is right. It's easy to do that if you're on the other side, because sometimes it's easy to be like, well, whatever they're doing, I'm against. But if it's on your own team, sometimes it carries a lot of weight to say, like, this is, I believe in conservative policies and I disagree, is way more powerful than Beto O'Rourke saying it, you know, like, it just doesn't, like,
right.
Like, because that means something to kind of that community, to that sector of our society.
Yeah, and a lot of times those voices are actually heard more, right?
Yeah.
If I'm a part of this group, and I'm, you know, then I'm going to be heard more by that group. And I heard once we were talking, it was prior to the Supreme Court ruling, somebody said, you know, we need straight allies. We need them to affirm, you know, the importance of equal rights and our right to marriage, because they already have all of these rights. They don't have to fight for them. They're doing it simply because they believe in this.
Right.
And that is louder than the person that's crying for their own rights. Of course, we're going to do it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and there are, you know, a lot of trans-based communities are charities out there to kind of donate your time and your money to as well. To kind of say, like, hey, the vast majority of homeless teens are part of the LGBTQ community. Oftentimes, homeless not by choice.
Right.
They have been removed or kicked out of their own homes because parents just could not reconcile love for child and love for an ideology, and love for ideology won. And so there are organizations in our community that serve directly with that, this population. All right, any other thoughts? All right, great. Well, it's a good thing we decided to break this into two parts, because this was a long episode. And so to all of our Beyond Today listeners out there, thank you for making it through this. Thank you to Roxy. Wow, you spec.
Woo, Roxy.
Yes. Roxy, I talked to you almost a year ago to be like, hey, I'd love to have you on to kind of talk about some of these issues. And we just never made it work. And I'm so thankful for you giving us an hour of your time. Kind of give your expertise and your knowledge. So thank you so much.
You're so kind. I hope I did okay. I hope the trans community is not upset with me. This again was just my, you know, personal opinion, not that of the community. So
yeah.
Well, we'll put a poll, you know, like when we post this on Facebook, we'll put a poll about how you did specifically.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. For all we'll our let you know. Listeners.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah. For our tens of listeners out there.
Yeah.
We'll see what they think. And Roxy's one of them, so she's gonna be like, yeah, yeah, pretty good. So
I have nines of listeners now.
maybe. Yeah. yes, thank you so much. And like I said, next week, part two, Pastor David and I will kind of join together and talk about this from more of a biblical point of view. Everyone out there, if you liked what you heard today, write and review us on whatever thing you are on. I don't know, Pastor David usually does this part and I usually stop paying attention. So we're on, like, the things, Facebook, right?
You can find us on the internet. Good luck.
Go to the internet. Type Beyond Sunday in the search engine. We might show up. Maybe on page 3. I don't know. But, like, we're there somewhere. We got an email, though. BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. I do know that one. If you have questions or thoughts, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you, even if you disagree with us. We'd love to, from either side, if you are part of the trans community and you'd say, like, hey, these are some things you said that you could be better in, please let us know. We want to know how to be better allies and kind of these things. I think, like we mentioned, like this was not an issue for me growing up. This was not something I even like really knew existed until like adulthood, beyond maybe a handful of people in the world. And now it's major cultural policy and discussion around it. So I think for a lot of us, we're a little unprepared to say like, I don't really know how to, I've never thought about trans kids ever. And I have to like feel like I'm making a decision on all these things I don't really know about. So if you are knowledgeable, please let us know how we can do better. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday. Thanks, everybody.